because that'd be silly.
Cleveland Browns Daily, weekdays at 1 on ESPN 850 WKNR. The newsmakers in Berea are on the home of the Browns.
ESPN NFL insider Lewis Riddick, what would you look for in a franchise quarterback? What are the most important traits to you?
Smartest quarterback teachers that I've ever been around have said that the quarterback position is always about decision-making and accuracy. And that encompasses a lot, but decision-making off the field, decision-making in the huddle, decision-making once the ball is snapped, how he prepares, and accuracy.
Cleveland Browns Daily, weekdays at 1 on ESPN 850 WKNR. Review and replay the top sports stories of the day. ECT with Munch, weeknights on ESPN 850 WKNR Cleveland and the new ESPNCleveland.com.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Hello there.
Didn't miss that.
You missed that on the cruise. I know you did. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, the band back together here on Cleveland Browns Daily. I'm back from Indianapolis. Wilhelm back from his cruise.
The Buckeye Cruise for Cancer. It was an amazing time.
Gibbs back from the dead with us as well. When we got there, Gibbs was sick. He had been on a Z-Pack, you know.
Uh-oh.
So his first move.
Stay out of the club, Gibbs.
His first move when we sat down was to cough all over his hand and then grab my water bottle like this and hand it to me. And then he didn't understand why I wanted it. I don't know. It was his water bottle now. It was over. But he rallied. I will give you
that.
There
was a cap on the water bottle.
Doesn't matter.
And then I said, okay, I understand where you're going from, and I'm just going to go buy you a water. You're like, you don't buy me a water. No one's buying me a water. I'm good.
I was good.
And then I was hydrated. I'm going to get you a water.
I was fine. Well, and then you revealed later on that all my 350 waters were stupid, as there was free water for us in the media.
I waited till Friday to tell you that.
Which I appreciate.
You got about $30 in water.
Yeah. Okay. So staying hydrated. But it's good to have everybody back together. Obviously, when you look at, you know, the combine, I think things for the Browns, from a Browns standpoint, became very clear what they need to do at pick number 2. And I think that, you know, talking to a lot of people in the NFL, it almost sounds like the Browns aren't going to be able to make a bad decision here, which is a good thing. It's just going to be kind of a preference. Are you a chocolate or are you a vanilla guy? It's going to be a preference thing. But we'll have all show. We'll talk about all that stuff. Before we get into that, let's talk about the cruise.
Yes.
How was it?
The cruise was amazing. It really was. I don't know the final numbers yet on what we raised. I know it was north of $1.5 million for the Urban and Shelley Meyer Cancer Research Fund, which directly goes to the James Cancer Center there on the Ohio State University campus. It was amazing. You know, there were stops in Labadee, Haiti, which is Royal Caribbean's private island. I did an amazing zip line, which I'll have to post to like my fan Facebook page because you got to see it. It's like one of the world's largest, longest zip lines, over a half a mile long. I was videotaping with my phone the entire time. My wife told me not to. I did anyway. Didn't have a GoPro, so I went with my phone, and I trusted my ability to hold on to it. But it was a blast. Stop in Ocho Rios, Jamaica. It was just great catching up with both all the athletes on the boat. I mean, there was, you know, the Miller Coors beer chugging competition that I was a part of last year, and of course signed up for that again. I finished in second place. Only to one individual who wants to remain unnamed because he is in fact an unrestricted free agent. So I won't name his name.
Nice.
He actually asked the crowd to like take your pictures now and just please don't post anything to social media.
So he came in second. There's no shame in that.
Cameras down. No. And the one thing about the individual that won is what he can do is it's gulp, open, gone. So it's like it's a 2-second chug of a 16-ounce beer. And mine is three big gulp. I'm a gulp, gone. Yeah. I just don't have that. I don't trust the reflex to be able to open the valve and literally pour a beer down your throat. I don't have that.
Me neither.
Okay, so I was happy to take second. It was awesome with, you know, the Buckeye fans are open to challenge any of us Buckeyes that were on stage to a chugging competition. There's a Watershed Distillery, which is a last day on the boat, which is a great distillery. They've got bourbon, vodka, old fashions, all kinds of great stuff there down in Columbus area. And it became a shot doing competition, you know, with some of the fans. But all in all, Lisa Cisco, Chris Quinn of the Buckeye Cruise for Cancer. If you don't know about this, check out their website. Next year is going to be their 10-year anniversary.
Wow.
So they did it big for nine.
And you said next year is going to be
bigger. Next year is going to be bananas. I don't know if the boat's going to get bigger, but they've already launched the dates. It's going to be.
How could it get bigger?
March 20th. Bigger boat is about all.
I'm saying, how could the boat get any bigger? That is the biggest boat I've ever seen.
I know, me too. But I think Royal Caribbean has one more in their fleet. Or I know they're watching the television in the stateroom. They're creating a boat that's going to launch in May that is like got a forest or like a jungle on the boat. I don't know. But there was putt-putt. The Flow Rider, which is like the surfing, you know, the surfer wakeboard on the back of the boat. Great to see all the Buckeyes. Great to see all the fans. You know, my people from Indian Lake, who I do a fundraiser with each and every year. Great to see them. But a lot of Coors Light consumed on that Buckeye Cruise, who's an amazing sponsor for the cruise. But like my wife and I, we will go until A, we die, or B, we're not invited back because it's that amazing.
That's awesome.
It is.
It's great to have that to look forward to.
It is.
And you get to go around and, like, not only that, it's great, you know, you get very well taken care of. You get gift bags. People will constantly be putting drinks in your hand. You get to walk around like a god for
you
a little
do.
While.
You really do. I mean, and our responsibility, there's, you sign, like, again, when they allot you to certain events that are for the cruisers, kind of as entertainment, again, the Miller Coors, it's like you have to be there. You know, you show up late or you miss one of those things, it's shunned upon. You might not get that invite back. So you really are on your P's and Q's, even though you're day drinking all day. You have to stay in tune to your watch and where you need to be. And then the both days that we're at sea.
They don't ask you to show up sober. They just ask you
no,
to show up.
No, they just show up and just play your part. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But there's two autograph signings on the boat, and there are two-hour signings. And this year there were so many people that we did 2 3-hour signings. So, but everybody gets an autograph, and that's part of the role that we play on the boat and otherwise just being – you know, positive and open to conversations. You don't sign an autograph outside of those hours. You don't really take a picture unless you can say no willingly. But, you know, most guys will say yes because people understand it's like, you know, got a little fraternity, you know, on the boat. They understand the rules and the parameters. And it's just amazing for me living in Cleveland. You meet Buckeye fans all over the place, but a majority of that boat are like hardcore cruisers, Buckeye Cruisers for Life, and from the city of Columbus. So it's just great to be around Buckeye Nation for 5 consecutive days, knowing that you're really just laser-focused on one thing, and that's finding a cure for cancer.
Absolutely. Well, it is good to have you
back,
and I'm glad that you had a very good time. While you were back, did you get a chance to watch any of the Combine?
I did.
I just want to get you. What were your kind of takeaways for the Browns from watching the Combine, or in general?
I caught up on a lot. You know, the second we landed, I was in tune to, you know, NFL.com on my phone, and it was on randomly in between cartoons at my house as, you know, you get reacquainted with your kids after being gone for 5 days. But I was very much in tune. I was, of course, very in tune to a lot of the Buckeyes. And I thought a lot of Buckeyes were going to blow people away. A few things that surprised me, I thought Ezekiel Elliott lived up to the hype, running the 4.47.
Looked good.
I thought Braxton's 4.5 was surprisingly slow.
Well, especially because it had been hyped that he was going to run like a 4.2 or maybe 4.3.
Correct. So, and I know that there's been rumors that, you know, some scouts had him handheld significantly faster than the 4.5, but everyone's handheld is different than a laser. That's why the standard is the Combine. I thought Bosa's 40 was disappointing. Darren Lee, I mean, what an athlete. I got to see how big, like, if he was 225, 220-something, you know, running the 4.47, still very impressive. But it's probably going to be a third down linebacker, at least as a rookie, and not going to be making a lot of tackles on the big backs that, you know, they run the ball so well in the National Football League at that size. He impressed overall. I think, you know, Von Bell and Eli Apple today have run well, especially with their size. But to get back, you know, on the quarterbacks, I watched, you know, all the throwing that these guys did, and I'm impressed by both Goff and Wentz. I'm even impressed, you know, a little bit by Paxton Lynch. I don't think he's in play at 2.
Right.
But I love the fluidity that Goff has, and I love the raw, natural talent that Wentz has.
Yeah.
So as you said to open up the show, it really is a matter of, and I know I always say it, the collective minds at the table. What is Hugh like? What is Sashi like? You know, what is Andrew Berry like in a quarterback that's going to be here in Cleveland for the next 5 years? Is it that guy, as you said, with the higher ceiling or the lower floor? And I think you can make that play on both of these guys.
When I look at those guys, and I had an opportunity to stand literally on the field, I'm basically in the end zone, and they're throwing. So you get a chance to kind of see them next to each other. And Wentz is just, his physicality jumps out at you. What I was able to notice from being close is that Goff, you know when you go and you see somebody like Steph Curry, the way Steph Curry shoots a basketball.
Which is ridiculous, by the way.
That shot he
made
to beat
the
Thunder.
Best player in the game. Oh, come on.
Ridiculous.
Has me thinking best shooter in the game right now.
And what's all these old dudes coming out? I could have guarded him. Like, oh, my dad. Like, you sound like ridiculous.
Come on.
Enjoy your spotlight when you had your spotlight.
He can pull up anywhere past half court.
Anywhere.
And make a three-pointer.
My dad was telling me, and I don't know, this is, you got to take it with a grain of salt, but this is my father's statistics, said from 28-plus feet, he's shooting 61%. Is that even possible?
Probably. He's probably taken 50 of those and made 30 of them.
Yeah. Guys, unreal.
Unreal.
But nonetheless, but when you see a guy who's got a pure shot, you just see the smoothness of the stroke, the effortlessness of the stroke, the quickness of the stroke. That's the way Jared Goff throws a football. He looks like he was born to throw the football. It is just pure, no wasted motion, very efficient, incredibly quick release, and I thought looked very comfortable in his drops for a guy who never played under center.
Yeah, and I agree with that.
I want to make another point. This whole being under center thing in today's NFL is becoming overblown compared to the NFL of the past. In the past, it was relevant. Last year, you had Blake Bortles, Derek Carr, all over more than 500 snaps from shotgun. Think about that. Brady was even higher than Carr.
Aaron Rodgers was probably very high.
Ben Roethlisberger.
Peyton Manning.
Peyton Manning. These guys are all in shotgun all the time. It is not nearly as big of a deal as it used to be. What's different is the looks he'll get, the vision he gets on it, but he picked the footwork up very quickly. No surprise, because we talked about how good his footwork was in the pocket. But just in watching, I knew he would excel in that environment, and he did. Just everything was so easy.
It was.
And he has plenty of arm strength.
And you know what I liked in watching both of these guys, but Goff in particular, is I loved watching the 5 and 7 step drops, throwing the slants, throwing that NFL out route. You know, on time, two receivers, making it, and it's a catchable football. But I love the timing. You know, as you always mention, you know, his footwork, his pocket presence that he has. I loved seeing that. The best way, you take a lot of that with a grain of salt, because there's no rush. There's no offensive lineman getting pushed back into you. But the timing of him throwing those routes and the accuracy of the football. The ball was in front of the receiver, you know, on that upfield shoulder or upfield number, or just out in front of him, that allows a receiver to catch the football, deviate, you know, a tackler, and make the yards after the catch that makes the Antonio Browns of the NFL so great.
And when you have to throw in tight windows, you've got to be accurate. You have to be able to anticipate, and he throws with anticipation. He was the one guy who was consistently throwing the ball before the receivers that he wasn't familiar with were out of their breaks.
Yep.
It's pure. Throws a very tight spiral. The majority of his passes are tight spirals. So it was just aesthetically very pleasing. Clearly the best natural thrower. And we talked to so many people at the Combine, Lewis Rick included, who said that's what Goff is. He is the best pure thrower here at the Combine. And you could see with some of the guys, like Kevin Hogan, looked like he was running, crow hopping, and javelin to get the ball 40 yards. Goff was just flicking his wrist, and it was going 40 yards.
Right.
So now we get to Carson Wentz. Very impressive stature. Getting to see him, very impressive, very sturdy looking, very good athlete. He throws the ball, stronger arm than Goff. Goff has, though, he has a plus arm. He doesn't have an average arm, for the people who want to say that. He doesn't.
And coming out of the 2014 Combine, what would you say Johnny Manziel's arm was? Average or a plus arm? Just to put it into perspective.
Average plus. Average plus.
Okay, gotcha.
Goff clearly throws the ball better than Johnny.
Okay, I'm just asking.
Yeah, I've been around enough of Johnny throwing. He throws it. Goff throws the ball more similar in terms of his arm strength to like a Derek Carr.
Okay.
Plenty of arm strength, or a Matt Ryan. Plenty of arm strength.
But not a full-on gunslinger.
Well, see, he is a gunslinger, though. Like, and he can put it in tight windows, and he's not afraid to do it.
Right, but I meant like just the rips of football.
It's interesting. So I thought he ripped it. I came away very impressed with his arm strength. When you watched Wentz throws a ball that is rarely a tight spiral.
But power behind it.
But there's a noticeable velocity. Okay. Now, it's funny. You know, you listen to, like, pitchers and catchers. So when Goff's balls were caught, it had that, like, perfect sound where it's, like, the spins right. So it, like, spins right in their gloves. Whereas with Wentz, it was kind of like,
kapow,
ba-boom. Yeah. Like, they had to catch
like
it.
Like a two sound.
Yes. And I thought watching him and then watching Lynch, not even in their league. Lynch, not even close. There are two quarterbacks in this draft that look to me like they are guys you could win a Super Bowl with.
And I thought watching Lynch do the same drills that I watched Goff and Wentz do, he's much larger, you know, taller, heavier. He's like kind of like rickety
in his
footwork, and I didn't like his footwork, and you could tell, to make the same assumption, that, you know, these guys play in a gun a lot, you could tell that Lynch played in the gun almost exclusively because of how rickety his 7-step drop looked.
But you couldn't with Goff. No,
you couldn't.
He did play exclusively in the
correct
gun. The other thing that kind of, and talking to people there, I think everybody kind of shared the consensus. Most people thought Goff won the combine. Other people thought Wentz won the combine. But those two guys did everything that they had to do on and off the field to solidify themselves as the top quarterbacks in this draft. And I think it's going to be, do you favor? Go to ClevelandBrowns.com or the Browns mobile app. I interviewed tons of people, from Rich Gannon to Greg Cosell to Lewis Riddick.
I listened to some of it Friday.
About these quarterbacks. And there were others, John Clayton, on and on and on. What it comes down to is, do you prefer a quarterback who wins with his mind, with footwork in the pocket, who is tough, who is accurate, who has all the things that I would say describe much more of, say, a Tom Brady type of a game? In an ideal world, Tom Brady's maybe the greatest of all time, but that's what I would say. Or Drew Brees, the way Drew Brees wins, those kind of guys. Or do you want the guy that is like unbelievable physical specimen that wins the way that, say, an Andrew Luck or, say, a Ben Roethlisberger win? Now, they both can win. I think that when you look at them, in the sense is, most people think that Goff has a much higher floor but a lower ceiling than Wentz.
Because of how he's built, and also how smooth and fluid he is as of the moment.
Yes. So that is something that I think is going to be very, very interesting to watch and to see it develop. And I think that when you look at these guys in terms of just pure physical stature, obviously the more impressive guy is Wentz in terms of stuff in the pocket and his ability to throw and the smoothness with which he throws the football. Because if you watch with Wentz, his balls were not always where they were supposed to be, even in those drills. Sometimes they're behind the receivers, et cetera. He seemed to like throwing to receivers moving left to right much more than he liked receivers moving right to left, which I thought was interesting.
He's a righty, correct?
And he's a righty. So I think it sees your eye better, and you can lead him out there better.
Yeah, but also, too, from a 5 or 7-step drop, you've got to look, you open away from that receiver initially and have to, you know, adjust your body back to make those throws.
Right, and that's something that Greg Cosell said that he noticed on tape that stood out about Goff, is the way that his eyes and feet and body move in unison. So I came away from there. Goff is my guy, and he will be my guy, period. However, I've come away with much more confidence in Wentz, and I don't think that it could be you're going to go ahead and be wrong. I think that both are – it's just different. The way I look at it, as we were talking about before the show, I think that Wentz has a better chance of one day being a top five quarterback in the NFL, but maybe not. I mean, who knows? But I think that's just from a physical standpoint. Whereas Goff, I think, has a much higher percentage of being, at the end of the day, being a top 12 quarterback in the NFL.
Okay.
And the Browns need to find somebody. When we come back, we're going to go through a couple of tweets here. Hey, Brandon, who keeps tweeting me, call the show, 216-578-0850. Call the show, 216-578-0850, and we'll talk about all this stuff. Because he's saying that every year I say draft a quarterback. Browns reach with Manziel, Whedon, and Quinn. Now you're calling them to reach it too. Come on. I totally disagree. And everybody at the combine totally would disagree with the statement that he's making about reaching on these quarterbacks. Number one. Number two, everybody acts like if you take a guy who isn't a quarterback that's supposed to be good, it's a sure thing.
Correct.
That is so not the case. Go back and look at different drafts. It's just not the case, not the reality. I wish it were. It would be great. But again, I'll say it again. If you get a guy who is your quarterback for 10 years and is a is that level quarterback, you can't reach for him. It's impossible. And if you get a guy who isn't, you couldn't have gotten a good value.
And
for
also,
him.
I mean, this is our shot at two.
This is our shot.
We're not guaranteed in the next 3 years. Say, you know, who Jackson, you know, there's viable improvement over the next 3 years. Okay, maybe 5-11, you're going to draft in the top 10, and then you're going to go 7-9, you're going to draft in the top, you know, top 20, and then you're 9-7, and you draft, you know, 23rd overall. You're never really going to go get that guy.
Correct. And if you go back to that 2014 draft where you say they reached for Manziel, if you take the right quarterback, and on the board at that time, Teddy and Derek Carr, you didn't reach, and you're fine. Just about getting the right guy.
Agree.
And if you get the right guy, you couldn't have reached for him. And if you don't, you couldn't have gotten to the right value on him. Period. It's that simple, and you can try to convince me otherwise, and you won't. You can try, but you won't. All right, 216-578-0850. We'll talk to you guys. What did you see at the Combine? Let us know here on Cleveland Browns. Daily Puss will bring Gibbs in. We'll get his thoughts on things. 216-578-0850. Zagura Wilhelm, CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Gibbs, let's bring you in for a second, Mullen Ferrer.
Yes.
Talk about your combine experience. How was it for you?
It was great, man. It's amazing how many NFL people are there. And, I mean, people that cover the league. Everybody's there. I mean, it is a who's who that descends on that city. And you just kind of walk around, and it's very informal. You don't have, like, high security. You don't have to go anywhere. And
no dress codes?
No. I mean, you want to look the part a little bit, but it's not one of those.
No arm showing.
It is very, very informal. And I think that was one of my biggest takeaways. Guys just are like, you want to talk? Let's go. Let's talk about it. What do you got for me? What do you want? I mean, Nathan mentioned it. We had a ton of interviews out in Indy, and it was just guys that were like, hey, you want to talk? Let's go. What do you want to talk about? I'm happy to do it for you. And just everybody's very relaxed. It's no holds bar. You find out some things that you maybe did, maybe you didn't want to know about your football team. And no one pulls any punches. It's straight talk. And I learned a lot this past week. Was very fortunate to go.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I thought it was such an education. And I was talking to Matt. I said it would just be – I hope that it works out that he's able to come, because the opportunity just to network and get those guys. You know, I had an opportunity. Ended up getting John Clayton on the show Friday, but not just to network for him for the show, but to sit at a bar – and sit down with John Clayton and hear him tell stories about when he was on the Penn State beat and Joe Pa was not happy with the stuff he was writing. And then, you know, you get to hear about what he's hearing from around the league. And, you know, you get an opportunity to really – and people, I guess, because the Super Bowl's over and it's the new season, people are really excited to talk about everything that they're hearing and thinking, et cetera. So it really is an amazing, amazing, amazing place. It's maybe – and talking to a lot of the people who cover the NFL for a living or are involved with the NFL, it's a lot of those people's favorite thing, because Indy it's a good city. You can walk right out of your hotel, go to a bunch of restaurants, go to a bunch of bars. Everybody's there. You see the Jura bus trolling
Jerry
around.
Jerry World was just rolling around, everywhere. Double parking, wherever the heck he wanted to.
But that's what's so cool about it. And, you know, the Super Bowl is so much bigger. You got so many more players there.
It's corporate. Yes.
This is just straight up hardcore football people, but you have the access to a city, and it's bigger than the group you'd get down the Senior Bowl, which is kind of stuck down there in Mobile, Alabama. So I think it really is a neat experience, and I love getting to go. I really love getting to go.
Very, very fortunate.
And I think next year, Gibbs, the Buckeye Cruise is the 25th through the 2nd of March. So if the Combine remains at or about the same week, I hope you can do both.
It would be lovely.
Yeah. Heck yeah, man.
It was fun. Gibbs and I went out one night on the town. The second night, he wasn't feeling he couldn't muster it.
What happened?
I've been battling this. Basically, my 11-year-old got us all sick. And it's going around the schools. It's a virus. There's nothing you can do. Like, I went to my doctor. I'm like, give me a Z-Pak just in case, because I don't want to be looking for a med clinic in Indianapolis. And I took it. I'm still not feeling 100%. It's ridiculous.
You don't sound 100%.
No.
I was in a haze from the cruise probably till midday yesterday.
It takes a while. I was after Thursday night on Friday. Because I was in a haze until
I said
it was radio show.
Prior to leaving for the cruise, I said, you have a buzz, whether large or small, at least 8 to 10 hours out of the day that you can either crank up, you know, to being full on, full blast, or you can reduce down to, you know, taking your nap.
Which is fantastic.
And Gibbs, I thought you'd be elated with this. So Coors Light, one of the big sponsors for the Buckeye Cruise. 6,000 16-ounce aluminum bottles consumed the first day of the cruise.
That is impressive.
It is. 15 pallets of cases were loaded onto the cruise ship.
I love that. It is amazing.
Yes.
And did they go through everything?
That I don't know. But, I mean, the Miller Coors people did a great job, and I was in tune with them. So they're going to put me on their route. So I'm going to have some cases sent to the house.
Oh. I think we need some cases sent to the CBD studio fridge.
Yeah.
You'll do no good in here.
Happy Friday.
By the way, apparently, Gibbs, your coughing is going viral. Scott Shelby says, Gibbs coughed on my daughter as we passed by the other day. And then he said, I'm kidding, but I would be honored to be coughed on by such a fine gentleman.
I appreciate that.
I also want to give a shout out to one of our listeners, Rich Marshall, who enjoyed when we were talking about buffets that we had been kicked out of, and I noted that the House of Prime Rib that
the guy emailed me.
Sent me a great email about how when he lived in San Francisco, all his boys got together and they would pick games during the year and put it all into a big pot, and basically the big pot at the end was used to go out, and they started off with some beer and then some wine and ended up at the House of Prime Rib where they had the private room and had a fine meal, and he said, just hearing me talk about the place brought it all back. So he sent a real nice email.
He did.
So
yeah, about the show as well, too.
Yeah, Rich Marshall out in Middleburg Heights. Thanks for listening, brother.
And Wilhelm, we had the best prime rib flatbread pizza maybe on the face of the planet.
The one thing I wish we had done going back.
I know. I know where you're going. Yep, exactly.
We needed it. That was the one.
We went marinara.
So I did have... On the my final night, went to St. Elmo's.
The best.
Fantastic.
Did you have the shrimp cocktail?
I did.
Did you like the cocktail sauce?
No, I don't like that sauce. I get it because I feel like I have to, and I don't like it.
And here,
why? You're a spicy guy.
Yeah, but it's not.
It's the horseradish.
Yeah, that's not spicy. Give me habanero.
Smothered my first shrimp in it.
Yeah, and then you were.
I do just because it's like synonymous for that, and then I enjoy my shrimp cocktail.
Yeah.
And just like. I kind of like drag it across just to get a light little
taste. Yeah, just a little taste. Just a little taste. But it was good, and I ended up getting – they had a giant piece of prime rib. I got, of course, because that's what I would do, and I had the au jus, and I was just thinking to myself when I was dipping it in there. I'm like, that pizza would have been something. Because we went to Harry and Izzy's, Gibbs and I, the first night, had a nice bro date, and it was a good time. A good time.
We did.
Who's pitching, who's catching?
Some good apps. There's some good stuff, man. The seared tuna.
Oh, it's fine.
Isn't St. Elmo's, though, a who's who? I mean, you say the combine's a who's who
of the NFL,
but St. Elmo's – on every single night is the who's who of the NFL, either head coaches or owners.
Urban was in there. Jerry was in there. A bunch of guys from the Raiders. A bunch of the top agents were in there, including Andrew Sims, agent to the Stars. So, yeah, it was packed. And then you go to Prime 57, which is the bar at the end of the night, and that's the place where
the JW bar
that everybody is. Yes. So, yeah, we ended up at the JW Marriott bar, and, walking Bruce Arians is right there. It's just you see everybody.
Yep.
You see everybody in the NFL. Norvall's walking around. Got to see the former defensive coordinator of the Cleveland Browns, now defensive coordinator of the San Francisco 49ers.
Yes, you did.
At a bar, which was
– Who?
Dun, dun, dun.
Jim O'Neill.
Did you bring your baseball bat?
I did not.
You did not.
Very fine conversation was had.
Really?
And
that's a conversation off the air.
It was fun. It was just a cool experience. But when you left there, Gibbs, because you got to see everybody that came in and certainly talked to us, etc. But when you left there, did you feel that it basically? By the way, the NFL is 99.999999999% convinced that the Browns are taking quarterback. Joey Bosa is not in the discussion for the Browns for anybody in the NFL. It's just for people in Ohio who call
our
show.
It's disappointing.
Right.
And did you get the sense, though, that it is basically Wentz, Goff, and now it's almost to the point where people are acknowledging, going into the combine, Wentz was the big leader. coming out of the combine, I think everybody thinks Goff and Wentz are both studs, and it's just a matter of what you are looking
Correct.
For.
Flipping a coin. I mean, 50-50.
But different styles. And a different thing, for example, a guy like Greg Cosell, who said he's more of a traits guy and a potential guy, he favors Wentz. When you look at a guy like Lewis Riddick, he wants a quarterback that wins from the pocket, that's a great thrower of the football, wins with his mind, great footwork. He prefers Goff.
Is it safe to say that Wentz is going to be a scrappier winning quarterback in the National Football League, and Goff would be more of a prototypical pocket winning quarterback in the National Football League instead of scrapping the way? It's going to be his delivery, his accuracy, his poise in the pocket that's going
to
win you games.
And his ability
And
to
Wentz
process.
Is going
to
be a little bit more a rough way of winning football games?
Yes, I think that's fair.
Okay. Just ask.
I think it's more the way that I would look at, let's say these guys both realize their potential. It would be, you know, from a stylistic standpoint, these are not comparisons, so I don't want to hear that. From a stylistic standpoint, Jared Goff would beat you the way Tom Brady and Drew Brees beat you, and Carson Wentz would beat you more like, I would say, an Andrew Luck or a Ben Roethlisberger
right.
beat you.
Okay.
At the end of the day.
And we do play in the AFC North, just saying.
Yes, we do. But, I mean, the AFC and the AFC East is, you know, not a, no slouch themselves. They produce quite a few more winners.
True.
There in the AFC East. All right, when we come back, we'll get to those phone calls. So if you're on, hold on. Sorry. A lot to get. It's early. 216-578-0850. Oh, we'll get Brandon on. Excellent. The Twitter battle guy from California. Brandon, you're in California. We have raised you to do better than that in California. Frank and Parma, Will North Olmsted, all you guys. We'll get to you right after this on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Rolling along. Feels good. Reunited.
It's easy.
And it feels so good. Let's go to the phone lines. We're going to bring our guy Brandon on from California, who says the Browns absolutely should not take a quarterback at number two. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You got it, man.
Got it. Floor is yours.
Where are you in California?
Carmel, California.
Oh, okay. I was born and raised in the Bay Area.
Yep, I know.
Yep.
This draft, these quarterbacks are not ranked anywhere near compared to the 15 draft or the 14 draft. Why reach? If we're going to get a quarterback, we need a quarterback, trade down. Number two should be a Hall of Famer or Pro Bowl type player. Get the best player. What's the point of us doing all this analytics and all the investment, all the stuff that we're doing, if we're going to reach on a quarterback?
So I guess let me start by saying this. There are, from at the combine, I was told from NFL insiders that had talked to teams or whatever. Now, I take it with a grain of salt because I don't understand why a team would say I have such and such at the top of my draft board. But multiple teams have Goff number one overall on their draft boards, and multiple teams have Wentz number one overall on their draft boards, and that both are considered top 10 overall prospects. Okay, that's just coming out of the combine from Indy with people there. So when you start to look at it that way, right, it's not a reach. And I still go back to what I said, is that if you get a guy, if for example, the Browns in that draft at number four had taken Derek Carr, who ended up going in the second round to Oakland, nobody would ever be sitting here on this show and say they reached for him. Same with Teddy Bridgewater, who was taken with the last pick of the first round. The Browns, unfortunately, were in a draft where there were three guys that look like franchise quarterbacks out of four, and they picked the wrong one.
Right. We picked the guy who isn't a franchise quarterback, and
correct.
I thought we should have took Derek Carr, but that's...
Sure, but my point is the same, which is that if you took Carr there, all of a sudden you didn't reach for a quarterback. They selected the wrong guy. If you took Teddy Bridgewater there, you didn't reach for a quarterback. You just selected the wrong guy by taking Johnny. When we're talking about... When you go back, if you were to do the 2014 draft over, and this is what I say to people, assume Joey Bosa, first of all, he's not J.J. Watt, they're different players, but let's just say he is the top defensive player in the National Football League. The Houston Texans actually have that guy in J.J. Watt, and they're in no danger of winning the Super Bowl until they get that quarterback. Now, what they needed to do in that draft, that they'd go back and do it again, knowing how good Khalil Mack is that they would still take whoever they liked the best out of Bortles, Carr, and Bridgewater. And that's my point. For the Browns, the one thing you haven't had is a quarterback for all these years, which is the only way you can get stuck at the level the Browns have been stuck at for as long as they have been stuck. So you haven't, and you're talking about guys that you took at 22, Whedon, Quinn, Johnny. They haven't taken a guy in the top 10. They haven't taken a guy in the top 5 since Tim Couch. And this is a team that needs that guy. For all the Courtney Browns and the Gerard Warrens and the, you know, all those early picks, Barkevious Mingo taken 6th overall. Find a quarterback, and then we can go from there. And I know that Denver won this year without, I'll say without a quarterback. But I feel that that is more anomaly than anything else. That will be tough to duplicate. And well, you've got, it just was, they came together with the perfect storm.
You look at the 2000 Ravens, and you look at the 2015 Denver Broncos. So 15 years, you know, in between is what? How many appearances by Brady? How many by Roethlisberger? How many Super Bowls were won by franchise quarterbacks with a decent defense? You know, so every 15 years, you can say something like last year will happen.
Sure.
Right?
But I also think that you're not getting guys. Now, granted, Peyton Manning fell off of a bleeping cliff this year. But you're not getting Aqib Talib to take that discount to come chase a Super Bowl. You're not getting DeMarcus Ware to take that discount to come chase a Super Bowl. You're not getting those veterans that ended up putting you over the hump defensively to come chase a Super Bowl unless you had Peyton Manning as part of your recruiting pitch. Now, did they get the Peyton Manning that they thought they were getting when they signed up? No. But that's, you can't get that without the quarterback. People aren't going to try to sign those deals unless they're coming for cash. And you're getting guys on the wrong side of their career that don't make a difference, which is what the Browns have done. You're not getting those guys unless you got that quarterback. The key in the National Football League is to have a quarterback that keeps you competitive, and that's what it should be all about. And again, if Hugh Jackson and Sashi and Paul DePodesta and Andrew Berry determine in their mind that one of those quarterbacks is ready to be that guy, at number two, it's not a reach. You take them and you take – I don't care if you draft – if we had to draft – let me ask you this. If the Browns had to draft in the next, let's say, 10 drafts in a row, and they're so bad they pick in the top five, all 10 in a row, wouldn't you want them to – if they had to take a quarterback in the top five every single draft until they got their quarterback?
Yes.
I would, because then at least you know you have a chance. And one thing I look at with Goff is this is a guy who went to Cal – was 1-11 there as a true freshman in an underrated program, in an outclassed program in a real conference, the Pac-12, that's produced some very good college football teams. He turned them around from 1-11 in 2 years, 8-5. He's been through a rebuild. He didn't get down on his teammates. He was a guy who elevated his teammates and turned that program around in a conference where you're dealing with the USCs and the UCLAs and the Oregons and the Stanfords and the Arizona States and the Arizonas of the world that are good football programs and that have churned out a lot of talent. Washington, we know we have some guys from Washington State, et cetera. It's a good conference. The other thing is, let's go back to that 2014 draft, okay? Or even let's go back to last year's draft. The one quarterback that stands out, Mariota didn't have a receiver who was getting any type of draft attention.
Right.
But Winston had guys in Rashad Green, and then, of course, before that, Kelvin Benjamin. Johnny Manziel had Mike Evans. Derek Carr had Davante Adams. Blake Bortles had Perriman, right, was down in UCF with him. And then, who's the other? Theodore had Devontae Parker.
Yep.
There's nobody with Goff that's at a receiver position that's getting any kind of attention in the National Football League.
Or running back.
Right. So this is a guy who's done it. I don't think you want to waste a top pick, but I don't believe you are a waste top pick. I think when you go and you whiff on Bark, let's say Barkevious Mingo, you never get anything out of him, you'll look back at that as a significantly bigger waste than taking a shot on a quarterback that you believe could turn your program around. And that's what the Browns need to do. They need to find that quarterback. Let's go back to the phones, 216-578-0850. Let's go to Frank in Parma. Frank.
I tell you what, you're working really hard to convince people. I think you're trying to convince yourself that the Browns should take a quarterback at number two.
I'm not trying. I am convinced. I don't need
I
to,
almost,
I, don't
I
need
almost
to convince
drove
myself.
Off the road when I heard you say the Browns cannot make a mistake at two. It's like picking between chocolate and vanilla. If you give me a second here, I want to make 3 points. And
go ahead.
You're dead flat wrong. First of all, this is an opinion. This is fact. More than 50% of first-round quarterbacks are busts. The Browns cannot afford another bust. They can't afford another first-round bust. They don't have that luxury. Number two.
So let me ask a question then. Who are the sure things in this draft?
Well, there aren't sure things, but there are positions where if you miss on a left tackle, you move him to right tackle. He's on your team for 10 years. At least you got a 10-year starter out of your pick. Okay? Number two, you're saying it's between Goff and Wentz, and what you're saying is it can't go wrong. So at Goff, you got a guy who couldn't carry Cal in the Pac-12.
I would
but
totally
somehow
disagree
he's
going
to magically come to the Browns and take him to the Super Bowl.
What was John Elway's record in the Pac-10 when it was a worse football conference?
Newsflash.
Hold on. You get your time.
I have no idea.
Yeah, he had a losing record. Did you know that?
Elway played 40 years ago. I have no idea what Stanford's record was 40 years ago.
Okay, I'm just saying it was a worse football conference then.
I do know this, that Goff couldn't carry Cal. He's not going to carry the Browns. Cal has better players, comparatively speaking, to their opponents in the Pac-12 than the Browns do right now against NFL teams.
That's absolutely incorrect, actually.
No, it's not.
Cal had nobody who was on the level of Joe Thomas. They had nobody on the level of Alex Mack or Joe Hayden on that team. You're actually wrong about what you're saying. And he took a team that was 1-11 and turned them in 2 years into a team that was 8-5.
The best he ever did was 8-5. 8-5. He's not carrying the Browns. That is a bust pick waiting to happen.
Okay.
You can try to pretend like somehow it's a great pick for the Browns. Okay. It's a guaranteed bust to be out of the league in 3 years.
Thank God you have no decision-making power. Thank God. I mean, what do you played big-time college football.
Yes.
Okay? You played at Ohio State. Number one, let me start here. Is college football a level playing field? Are there certain programs that are better than other programs and get superior talent year after year after year after
yes.
year? Ohio State being one of them.
Correct.
So if you had a quarterback who went to a school, let's call it, I'm trying to give a good pack, a good Big Ten comparison. Let's say, I don't know what the actual record was in the chronological record for Drew Brees was at Purdue. But let's say you have a quarterback who goes to Purdue and they're 1-11. And 2 years later in the Big Ten, they're 8-5 under that quarterback. Would you at a program like Ohio State be like, this dude just elevated this program significantly?
Absolutely. And I think when you look at the top tier programs in that conference, Ohio State, Michigan State, Wisconsin, we'll even say Michigan, you know, maybe even Nebraska. When you play that program, the one thing that you're aware of is what this player is capable of doing to you with superior speed, superior athleticism, and superior talent, because one player can put that team on their back.
And would you, because you're more qualified, maybe you're more qualified to talk about this than I am, the Browns' talent level relative to other NFL teams and Cal's talent level relative to the upper echelon of the Pac-12, where is there a bigger gap?
Bigger gap at Cal.
No question. If the Browns had that quarterback, then they would be able to win a lot more games right away.
Right.
And Cal did it in 2 years. And again, there aren't people who are coming off of this Cal team that are setting the NFL on fire at the skill positions other than Goff. Frustrating. You don't have to agree with me. I don't care about that. You don't have to agree with me that you like Goff. Maybe you like Wentz better. Maybe you think none of these quarterbacks are any good. That's fine. But use arguments that make sense. That's all I'm asking for. Let's have a debate. I love to have a debate. Gibbs knows that. I'm not always right. How about that, Gibbs?
Sometimes.
I'm not. However, let's have like an intelligent discourse. That's all we need to do. That's all. It's not hard. I don't think it's that hard. To say the Cal and their overall talent is same, is closer to their competitors in the Big in the Pac-12 or a top college programs than the Browns is, I mean, that is your – saying a lot about the Browns, who, by the way, have a guy who's going to be a surefire Hall of Famer right away. You know, in the NFL, the talent matters, but you know what matters? Having a great quarterback and having a great coach.
Yep.
And those are the teams that have those two things, and typically they go hand in hand because when you have a great quarterback, you're winning more, so a coach gets to stay, that you get to have those together. All right, we'll come back with more. 216-578-0850.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Well, I just got a tweet
okay. That
says, can't call, but you said Jared Goff could be a top 12 quarterback in the NFL. That's not a number two worthy pick. Rather go with Miles Jack or Treadwell. Can't miss.
Hold on.
What?
Hold on. So you're saying A Browns fan would not be satisfied with a top 12 quarterback in the National Football League, which probably would give you a shot every year to win your division.
Yes. Okay?
And would you say, looking at our division, Ben Roethlisberger, is Ben Roethlisberger the only sure thing top 10 passer in our division? Because Flacco's probably right there
borderline
at 10, 11, 12,
borderline.
Right?
And Dalton's gone to the playoffs 5 straight years.
That's what I mean. Okay. So we wouldn't take that to go get, and what was he asking for?
To take a left tackle who, if he doesn't work.
Or, no, it was Miles Jack or Treadwell.
Miles Jack,
you're
going to
take a guy coming off an ACL injury or a guy who really no one has going in the top 10 right now in the draft.
I would urge everybody to go watch 2 games of Jared Goff's, okay, and then tell me what you think of him. And the first game would be the Utah game, because everybody who just looks at the stat line from that game should go watch that game and see what they think of Jared Goff's 5 interception game.
Okay.
And I want to know what you think about that, okay? Number one. Number two, watch his Arizona State game. It was about 45 degrees that day. He led them back through for over 500 yards and 5 touchdowns, took some crazy hits, and stayed in the pocket and basically willed his team back to win the game. So watch those 2 games, and then you can, and then at least you can have more of an opinion, because everybody goes, oh, well, he threw the 5 picks against Utah. Just watch the game. Look where the ball was more often than not in that game. Just watch it. That's what I'm asking you to do. Watch the Stanford game where he went 37 of 54 for 386 and 2 touchdowns. Watch the Arizona State game where 30 of 51, 542 and 5. In his last 4 games in college against Oregon State, Stanford, Arizona State, and then in a bowl game, Jared Goff didn't throw for fewer than 386 yards. He threw for a combined 19 touchdowns and 1 interception in his last 4 games in college. Okay? Just check it out. And check out his bad game.
Yeah,
watch that game.
And for me personally, what's shocking in walking back in, you know, to the studio here is we haven't had this naysaying about a quarterback prior to the combine. If you hear any sound coming out of the combine or in tune to anybody's Twitter handle, that's anybody in the National Football League, it's almost a foregone conclusion, A, that the Browns are taking a quarterback at number 2, and B, it's Goff and Wentz, and everything that you've said about them is, it's got to be one or the other. It's just a matter of your taste or your liking about the 2. And now we have fans or our fan base reaching out and saying, and it's not just anything about Goff, it's about not taking a quarterback at number 2.
Well, it's like we're anti-quarterback. What's the one
thing? Who's the sure thing?
What's the one thing we haven't had? Somebody tweeted, back in 2004, the Raiders at number 2 overall took the quote-unquote best player available as Robert Gallery, an offensive lineman. In that same draft were Ben Roethlisberger and Phillip Rivers. How did that work out for them? And by the way, okay, so if you take a left tackle at number 2 and he's not good, you then have a 10-year start at right tackle. First of all, that's not always true. Look at Tony Mandarich. Look at Robert Gallery, number 1. Number 2... we have had, by the way, the best left tackle in football, by many people's accounts. We have had the best center in football, by many people's accounts. And we've had a right tackle who hasn't missed a snap and is very solid. Everybody says we have to have Mitchell Schwartz. And how many wins have those people translated to? Having 3/5 of an unbelievable line. Plus, he added Betonio, who many people say may be the second best guard, left guard in football, behind only Zach Martin.
And I've told, the winning percentage that Joe Thomas has been, including a 10-6 year, is 37%.
So I don't understand why people are all of a sudden like, let's not get a quarterback. What if it doesn't work? Then you're not in any different position than you are now. Just like if you draft a left tackle or a right tackle and it works, Jalen Ramsey impresses me. He looks like a difference maker. And if the Browns had their quarterback already, say they had picked a Carr or a Teddy instead of Manziel, I'd be all over that. That would be fantastic. But until you get the quarterback, you need to get one. And Chris Daniel says, how many games do you watch on quarterbacks again? You said it would depend. You said it before on the show. I couldn't remember. I've watched every single game of Jared Goff from this season. I watched every single game of Carson Wentz from this season. Not many, by the way, on the Carson Wentz. And I watched most of Paxton Lynch's season until I felt I was pretty good on him. When you look at this thing, there is no such thing as a safe player in the draft. Jadeveon Clowney, not a safe thing. My buddy Cleve T.A. says, back in 2009, you remember the linebacker Aaron Curry?
Yep.
He was supposed to be like automatic. Went to a great situation, didn't work out with him. There aren't sure things. What is sure is that as long as the Browns don't have a franchise quarterback, they're not going to be a winning organization. That actually is a sure thing.
Right.
Okay? So I don't understand why are we all of a sudden against taking a quarterback and reaching. You really think the difference between, let's say Goff turns out to be a franchise quarterback, and let's say we end up with a defensive end that's an absolute average starter in the NFL. Okay?
Okay.
Do you think the difference in having a good quarter, in having an average, like a below average non-franchise quarterback, and having the best defensive end in the NFL, what's the difference? I'd much rather be the team that's got the quarterback and is average at that position than the team that's got J.J. Watt and trotted out a non-quarterback to play quarterback.
Right. And I think if you go get your quarterback and you add assets around him, the Cleveland Browns mentality might change once they have their franchise quarterback, and with the cap space that we have, go get that defensive tackle the next year in free agency, overpay to get him. If you feel like we've got our guy offensively that can score points, we're one destructive piece away on defense from being really good on defense too, to win our division, make the playoffs, and contend.
And do something.
Spend your money then.
Yes.
Right? Because
exactly.
There's no quarterback going to hit the market that's worth spending our money on.
No.
Okay?
No.
And this is our best shot to get a guy.
Correct. That is correct. And again, this guy says, what is this, Goff? I feel the same way about Carson Wentz. I mean, right now we're just talking about the quarterback position in general. I prefer Goff. I like the way that he wins. I like, and to me, you look at Wentz, he's got a higher ceiling. He's got unbelievable physical tools. He impressed me at the combine from talking to people at the combine. And by the way, when the guy said, you know, you're wrong, it's chocolate vanilla, you're flat out wrong, because he's got his crystal ball. Mine's at the cleaners. I don't know what's going to happen, but I do go to the combine. And one of the things I do is have an opportunity to network with people in the NFL who talk to talent evaluators, who are talent evaluators, who cover the league, and tell you what they're saying. And you got guys like Pat Kerwin, who I know everybody respects. He's got Goff and Wentz going in the top four. He has Wentz to the Browns at two, Goff going to Dallas, because he said Goff wins the same way that Tony Romo wins, from the pocket and the way Jason Garrett likes. These two guys are both worth it. So these two guys are both worth the risk.
In this year's draft.
Because until you get that guy, it doesn't matter.
Correct. And yes. I think it's hard to compare Winston Mariota in last year's draft, because we were not positioned at number two to be able to select either of those two guys.
Agreed.
We have our shot at number two.
Let's
knowing the Titans won't take a quarterback at number one, you got to pull the trigger.
Yeah, and I think, and again, when I said it's chocolate or vanilla, that's how it was framed to me by people at the Combine who study the National Football League. It was framed to me that you have two guys. Goff is the most ready now. Wentz has the bigger ceiling, bigger body. You have an opportunity, but both people think these guys are both worthy of top 10 picks, will go in the top 10, likely in the top 5 or top 7 if they won't get past the Niners and Dallas, and that you have to decide what suits you and what you want to do more. Does Hugh want the big guy, or does Hugh want a guy that is a better version of Andy Dalton, and he had a ton of success with Andy Dalton in that offense? So that's what it comes down to. That's it. Period. End of story. All right. When we come back, we'll get to the phone lines, 216-578-0850. Somebody said we already have a better than average quarterback. His name is Josh McCown. He's 36, and he can't stop. He can't play a whole season. He can't stop getting hurt. Got to get the franchise quarterback and a young one at that. All right, we'll be back. Hour number two, CBD on ESPN 850.